to interviews? That is just a totally overused device to make easy jokes. You know, talking to the camera about how you really feel and then cutting back and saying something completely different. I just hate that. I love it. Great device.
Everybody, welcome to the Geek Generation. I am your host, Rob Logan, joined again in the studio by Matt West.
Nostrovia.
And Paulo. Oh, he's air horning it up. He's all ready.
I did it.
You were waiting for that for a while, weren't you?
I've had this app for so long.
Okay, this is our fall TV preview for 2015. We do this every year where we go through all the major new pilots from the five major networks and talk about them and see what we think's going to stick around, see what we think's going to go away real quick. We do only talk about the ones for the most part that actually have video previews. We've tried doing everything in the past, but it's really hard to get a good sense of a TV show when you don't even get to see any clips from it whatsoever. You don't really get the tone or the character chemistry or what they're going for. Granted, some of those previews, you don't accomplish that either, but those shows probably won't last very long. So we're going to start off with ABC, which has the first show on there, Dr. Ken, which stars Ken Jeong. Am I saying that right? Jeong. Doctor-turned-actor-comedian Ken Jeong plays Dr. Ken, a brilliant physician with no bedside manner. He is always trying to be a good doctor as well as a good husband and dad to his two kids. However, these good intentions have a way of driving everyone crazy at work and at home. Luckily, his therapist wife, Allison, is just the right partner to keep things sane. What'd you guys think of this?
I think Ken Jeong is probably going to carry the show.
Yeah, think?
I mean, like, the only, like, when I was watching the preview, like, the only parts that I really cared about were with Ken Jeong. And, I mean, like, the family is kind of forgettable.
Yeah.
I mean, the kid, the son is, like, the kid. When he was in a few episodes of Fresh Off the Boat, so I guess he got that ABC connection and got into this show. It's kind of like, I mean, most of it's forget. I mean, although Tisha Campbell is in the show, and if you're a fan of Martin.
Oh, I didn't even think of that.
Yeah, she's in the show.
Martin!
So that could be good. I mean, you know. But, yeah, like, I mean, it's kind of like, isn't it just really just a sitcom at this point? Like, it's a generic family comedy sitcom.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Sort of. Yeah. I mean, the only supporting cast that really jumped out to me was Dave Foley.
Right. Yeah. Right. I just feel like, I mean, Dr. Ken is pretty funny in doses. When you get him in bit parts or he's on screen for 2 or 3 minutes in a pop, he's really funny. But I think by 22 minutes of it, just for over a season,
right?
I just think that by the end, you're going to tune out. I just don't know that there's enough non-standard sitcom fare that'll be a part of that that's going to keep you tuning in every week.
I totally agree.
Yeah. He's good. He's a good actor, I think, you know, as a comedic actor. He's good in Community because there's so many things to balance it out, balance him out. But in a show where he's carrying the lead, like, it might get old pretty quick.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I don't know if that one's going to last that long. Mm-hmm. He's got a lot of, like, internet credibility, I guess, like, internet popularity from the Hangover movies and whatnot. But I don't know if that's really going to do him any huge favors, because I don't see that crowd carrying over to this kind of entertainment. The Muppets! The Muppets return to prime time with a contemporary documentary-style show. For the first time ever, a series will explore the Muppets' personal lives and relationships, both at home and at work, as well as romances, breakups, achievements, disappointments, wants, and desires. This is a more adult Muppet show for kids of all ages.
Sold.
I'm in, I guess. Yeah. It's just like...
I know somebody who actually worked on the show. He's been super proud of it. He's been like a long time Muppets fan. He's worked on other Henson properties in the past, and he says it's awesome. He, like, when they took the teasers to the network in order to get a pilot run, pilot funded, the teaser got a standing ovation by the network execs.
Wow.
And they just said, we're going to pay. We're off the teaser. They got a season. It's that good. It's like that funny. And there's definitely some adult parts. I think it might be a 9 o'clock show.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not positive, but I think it's not even like an 8 o'clock show. It's on at 9, and the jokes look pretty good from what's in the pilot, the teaser.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, they're clearly spoofing the style of a lot of modern sitcoms. I was thinking of Modern Family in particular,
yeah,
where they kind of address the camera and there's all those cutaways, and Gonzo has the great joke of talking to the camera and then being like, oh, and then you see someone make a statement contradictory, and that's the funny part, and then it's exactly what happens 2 seconds later. So yeah, I'm totally in for this. I love anything.
I love the Muppets.
That.
I love the Muppets. I have for my whole entire life, and through some of the weaker properties they've been involved at, and some of the stronger stuff. I'm psyched that Disney bought the property and is really now doing what I'd hoped they would. A couple strong movies, and now hopefully a TV show that will be on for a while.
Yeah. The Real O'Neills, a fresh take on a seemingly perfect Catholic family whose lives take an unexpected turn when surprising truths are revealed. Instead of ruining their family, the honesty triggers a new, messier chapter where everyone stops pretending to be perfect and actually starts being real. Is this the real world?
I know, right? That's what I was thinking when I heard that. Ugh.
What is going on there? I'm personally not big on stuff with a religious base like this, even if it seems like this might be playing with a lot of those stereotypes. It is interesting to see a series that's not built on either star power or a previously existing franchise, though. Yeah. Like, I'm not necessarily familiar with any of the people in this show. I haven't really seen them before. But either way, even those things considered, it still failed to hook me.
Mm. Martha Plimpton was, in my mind, her biggest role was in The Goonies.
Oh, yeah.
And how long ago was that?
Right, right.
The biggest draw of the show for me was just that they're taking people and they're developing a character through their fall and their recovery, So, it's endearing. Everybody can relate to it. Everybody's got something that, they either keep under wraps or they've got some family member who's got some problems or whatever.
Or some people are secretly Batman.
Well, yeah. I don't know if it's a secret anymore, Rob. We tell everybody.
Like, every chance I get.
Like every week, we're like, Rob is Batman, guys.
Worst secret identity ever.
But yeah, the show's kind of like, I guess they're trying something new. We'll see what happens, but I don't know if I'm going to watch it, though.
Yeah. I mean, it is nice to see that the characters do look a little more developed than just your 2D sitcom fare.
Yeah.
Or like every one-note character that's going on there.
Right.
Hey, in series that should never be.
Yes.
Based on the hit movie of the same name, Uncle Buck is a fun-loving but irresponsible guy who needs a job and a place to stay. By happy coincidence, his niece and nephew's nanny has just quit and his brother and sister-in-law need his help. His unconventional personality may just make him the right fit for the family, and they may be the answer to his problems too. Mike Epps in the role of Uncle Buck, which looks a little different than the John Candy one. My only thoughts here is that John Candy is Uncle Buck.
Yeah.
John Candy's dead, so this is not Uncle Buck. Yeah. And it's fine to borrow the concept. Absolutely fine. Yeah. Just call it something else.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I like Mike Epps as Day-Day in Next Friday.
Yeah.
Is a great character. Yeah. And the Uncle Buck movies, the source material is awesome, but it didn't need to be rebooted, didn't need a reimagining of it. You're right. Just call it, whatever, my uncle or whatever. Give it some kind of witty name and you do the same thing and not have it borrow on what John Candy did.
Where's the legion of Uncle Buck fans that are like, oh, a series we've been waiting for so long? That's the problem. Like, I understand when people say, I'm going to continue this franchise or reboot this franchise that has a fan base that's just clamoring for more. Mm-hmm. But why Uncle Buck?
Yeah, it kind of doesn't make any sense.
No.
Like, why would you bring it back? First of all, where's the demand?
No.
Like, second of all,
call it Uncle Joe.
Yeah. Just call it something else. Like, it's just the generic irresponsible adult tries to maintain a family. Like,
yeah.
They've done literally dozens of movies that are exactly like this.
Yeah.
And they've done probably just as many TV shows that are based on the same premise. Mm-hmm. Like, just do it again.
This like, will fail because of the inevitable comparison.
Yep. Yeah.
Which they did to themselves.
Why build that expectation exactly. if you're not going to play off of it at all?
And the trailer even took movie jokes directly from the movie and just redid them. It's like, but you're going to be a sitcom. You only got an hour and 45 minute original source material. Are you going to just burn one or two jokes every episode in the first season?
Right. It seems like a really dumb, weirdly thought out move.
Yeah.
The next one here is a show called The Catch, which I believe exits us from the comedy fair from ABC and jumps into the dramatic side. From Shondaland's Shonda Rhimes and Betsy Beers, The Catch is a new thriller centered on the strong, successful Alice Martin. She's a fraud investigator who's about to be the victim of fraud herself by her fiancé. Between her cases, she is determined to find him before it ruins her career.
This looks a little interesting.
It is a cool premise.
Just because of like the sort of like backstabbing nature of it.
Yeah, you know? All the con art stuff like flying around.
And like that attention to detail and like how you put together your life. And, you know, like the – and they address it in the trailer too, like how – Building up a con over a long period of time tends to leave a mark, and you have feelings for that person.
Yep.
And like, I really liked the lead. I can't even say her name. Mirielle Enos.
Yep.
She was in a Sabotage, which.
Oh.
Which I
should. The Schwarzenegger movie?
Yeah. She was the lone female.
Oh, wow.
Member of the crew that Schwarzenegger ran. And she was great in the movie. I mean, she was a badass, like. She was kicking as much ass as the guys, and like I really liked her in that movie, and there wasn't enough of her.
Mm-hmm.
So this is kind of like, for me, it's kind of like, oh great, she's got her own role now, and
that's cool.
You know, she's definitely like a positive, like powerful female, and she's doing it really well.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm excited to see it.
I thought the premise was really solid. That got me, but in watching it, none of the characters themselves in the trailer seemed to pop. I didn't feel like any of the characters, if you could get even that one lead character to pop more, I think I probably would be sold on watching it. Because again, the premise is awesome, but just none of the characters in that bit of time. And that's, you know, you had between 2 and 5 minutes to make me care about somebody. And that's a tough call. But
yeah.
No one seemed to be fleshed out enough to make me go, ooh, you know, I care enough that I want to see really what happens other than just a general premise, which, I mean, honestly, that's similar to what's going on in Blacklist. So I'm already watching something where there's some sort of background fraud or whatever going on with your main character. So, and they've done a great job at fleshing it out, making me care. So if you're going to make me watch something that's similar or has a similar theme, you got to sell me in that short bit of time. And
I don't
know that they did that.
What they did do right for sure is they set up the long story of like her trying to get back the guy that had the long con on her. And they have the weekly procedural set up. So they're going to be doing stuff in between kind of this longer case that's going on too. So that's a smart thing right from the get go. But again, like you said, Matt, same thing. None of the characters really popped for me.
They're kind of teeter tottering too on like, is this going to be like a drama heavily influenced by romance, or are we going to get to see more like the fraud aspect of it? Like, is there going to be like which side of the fence is going to fall on? And like, I hope it doesn't go to like the dramatic romance side. Cause that's just kind of like boring. That's
right.
I mean, that's like every other show that these people who are making this show
right,
do.
Right.
It's you don't need more of that. You need that to be one element of a show that's about something else.
Agreed.
I hope that's the direction it goes in.
Totally agree. The Family. This thriller follows the return of a politician's young son who was presumed dead after disappearing over a decade earlier. As the mysterious young man is welcomed back into his family, suspicions emerge. Is he really who he says he is?
Didn't they make this movie?
I think so.
There was a movie that exact same premise, not except take out the politician, but
within the last year or two, right?
Yeah, like it's definitely on Netflix, I'm pretty sure. And it's like a kid like vanishes for 20 years or something and like reemerges, and people are like, oh yeah, it's him. No, wait, is it really him?
Right.
Like it's the same.
That was like Resurrection was a show that they did that with within the, and he came in this one. The kid was
the same age though. Right. Or he was younger.
He was the same age as when he disappeared. In this one, he comes back and he's aged.
Right.
Whereas that he didn't age, but it's still, and I didn't know if it was there a sci-fi feel to this, a drama feel to this? I don't know. I didn't know what it wanted to be.
Like, why are you making movies into TV?
Yeah.
Like, they already did this.
I already know I'm going to hate the mom. Because she just seems like a total ass in the in the preview, I thought. Yeah. And for the most part, the whole tone of it just kind of came off as creepy and depressing.
Yeah.
Which I'm not interested in creepy and depressing.
Yeah, I'm not really a fan.
No. Of Kings and Prophets, an epic biblical saga of faith, ambition, and betrayal, as told through the eyes of a battle-weary king, a powerful and resentful prophet, and a resourceful young shepherd on a collision course with destiny.
Okay.
I had to read it like that.
Let me tell you exactly how this show got pitched. Okay. Right? The guy is in the meeting, and he's like, and the executives are like, so, okay, how do we get a Game of Thrones-esque kind of show on our network?
Yep.
And then somebody in the meeting is like, well, we could make a movie about the Bible. And we could that could draw like the middle of the country to
right,
it.
Right, right.
You know? But, you know, we'll keep it relatively PG or G or whatever. And we'll make it about the Bible. People will love it. But it'll be King of Thrones-esque because we've got like a king and we've got like another guy who wants to be the king. And it's like, fuck, stop.
Well, keep in mind that they tried to do something similar with AD, The Bible Continues.
Yeah.
Which was this season. It was a brand new show. It's already been canceled.
Yeah.
So the last Bible-tied show has already been canceled after one season. So I don't know.
Watching the preview, I was just like, is this Hieroglyph? The one that got canceled before it even aired?
Right. And it's like the whole David and Goliath thing.
Yeah.
Like, come on. This is basically like if you put a Bible skin on Game of Thrones and then you cut out the boobs. Like, this is basically what you're trying to do.
That all sounds bad.
It just makes me think. It just makes me think that I can work in Hollywood. Like, I don't need any sort of credentials or anything. I can just go in there and pitch stupid movies to people and people.
Based on other successful stuff.
Yeah. I just need to get like at the right place in line where the executive is just fed up with life.
Yep.
And they'll be like, yeah, yeah, whatever. We'll give you money.
Blood and Oil. Billy and Cody LaFave, I believe that is, dream of a new life beyond their working class roots and move to the Bakken of North Dakota, booming after the biggest oil discovery in American history. They're soon pitted against a ruthless tycoon who forces them to bet big and put everything on the line, including their marriage. You'll see in the preview video trailer, if you watch this, that it's just called Oil there, but everywhere else I've seen it listed as Blood and Oil, so I am confused already.
This show doesn't know what it wants to be.
Nope, not even by name. The trailer I thought was a little confusing, too, because I couldn't tell the differences between the two tall white guys with spiky hair.
Right, yeah. It was definitely good to see Don Johnson back in a starring, well, a major dramatic role, because when he gets in and puts his mind to it, Don Johnson can be a really good actor.
Yeah.
Again, this isn't really my style show, though.
No.
So I wouldn't be watching it. No. It looks like it'd be good, but
I mean, it's just isn't it just taking a page from Dallas?
Like, and they did a reboot of Dallas already.
Isn't it still on TV? Like, what's going on?
Quantico. A diverse group of recruits has arrived at the FBI Quantico base for training. They are the best, the brightest, and the most vetted, so it seems impossible that one of them is suspected of masterminding the biggest attack on New York City since 9/11.
Again, this is basically The Recruit with Al Pacino and Colin Farrell in TV form.
Yeah.
Take out Colin Farrell, plug in a woman. And that's it. That's basically what it is. It's like the deception of FBI training. Mm-hmm. It's like, I mean, I'll still watch it because it looks kind of cool.
It definitely looks like the most promising of ABC's dramas.
Especially with Hannibal getting canceled. Yeah. Now I have kind of room for something sort of FBI-ish. So this is, of all these, was probably the one I would most likely give a chance to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's got that like whole, there could be a whole nother world behind the veil kind of thing. So. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's definitely good.
A whole new world. A new fantastic point of view.
Exactly. Magic carpet rides, motherfucker.
Well, we are an ABC, so we can make
this our is Disney true. Videos. This is true.
Yeah. But this is basically like, just watch The Recruit and watch this trailer.
Yeah.
I didn't even think that, but you're absolutely
same
right.
Same thing. Yeah.
Wicked City follows a unique case set in a noteworthy era of LA history, starting with a murder case from 1982 centered on the rock and roll cocaine-infused revelry of the Sunset Strip. Alliances are formed between detectives, reporters, drug dealers, and clubgoers to solve a serial murder case.
I love the setting of the show.
Just from what it
looks like, it's pretty cool.
Yep.
Didn't see that there was going to be a murder in the trailer coming.
Mm-hmm.
I'm probably going to start watching it, and I'll give it one or two episodes. And if it feels like it's dragging, then I'm probably going to bail out.
Yeah.
You know, Erica Christensen's one of the people in it, and she was in Swim Fan, yep, which was kind of a cheesy movie, but the psychological breakdown she played of that character was pretty cool.
She was good on Parenthood, too. Yeah, I don't know if you watched that, but...
So I've liked her in things previously, so... Mm-hmm. And again, the setting of it, that whole time and play, it really looks cool, and it looks like it's well done, so...
I'm concerned that it seems all be centered around one case.
Mm.
Yeah, where are they going, right?
Yeah, how is this a series? They'd need... I don't know, I guess they'd have to have the same kind of setup as the Catch... Where they have that's the big case, and then they have more procedural stuff.
Right.
But they didn't really have any of that kind of procedural kind of influence going on.
It kind of doesn't follow like the traditional TV model.
No.
Like you have weekly episodes that build up to like a bigger story.
Right.
And then have that story kind of take over. It's just like, here's the big story.
Which is fine depending on how many episodes you have. We're seeing TV evolve anyway, but I don't know if on a major network people are ready for that.
Yeah.
We move from ABC to CBS, and the first show is a comedy called Angel from Hell, stars Golden Globe and multiple Emmy Award winner Jane Lynch in a single-camera comedy about Amy, a colorful, brassy woman. I love the adjectives they use for characters on these descriptions all the time. A colorful, brassy woman who insinuates herself into Allison's organized and seemingly perfect life, claiming to be her guardian angel. Allison is an intense, driven doctor who is sure that Amy is just an inebriated, outspoken nut until every one of her warnings proves true. Cautioned by Amy not to tell anyone about her, Allison can't discuss this over-the-top oddball with her father and business partner Marv, a sunburned dermatologist who shares an office with Allison or her younger brother Brad. They really introduce every friggin' character. These are so long. A pharmaceutical sales rep who lives over her garage. As Allison tries to push Amy away, Amy makes her final pitch. Her sole mission is to provide Allison with helpful guidance that nudges her in the right direction in life, and it's her final chance to prove herself as an angel. With that, Allison agrees to this unlikely relationship because maybe a weird friend is exactly what she needs, and what if Amy really is her guardian angel?
Yeah, I like Jane Lynch. I like Kevin Pollak.
Mm-hmm.
I hope they're able to carry the show, even though Kevin Pollak is probably not going to be in that substantial a role.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to basically be banking on Jane Lynch to be sort of like the thing that I'm watching for.
Totally.
Because everybody else is kind of like vanilla, like not that great, not noteworthy. But she's,
how do you compete with Jane Lynch?
Yeah, she's definitely like, she's got the volume turned up to 12.
She's
like
a colorful, brassy woman, damn it.
It said so in type.
Yeah.
Had she had a bunch of plastic surgery? I'm just wondering because like when I was watching this trailer, it didn't, I don't know. She looked different than she does on like Hollywood Game Night or whatever.
Hmm.
May just be me.
I don't know.
Might be good makeup. Might be that network quality makeup.
Yeah, there's a different. Yeah, when you're on a
CBS quality makeup.
Yeah. Are you guys interested in watching this or?
I'll watch the first couple episodes.
Yeah.
Not really my style show though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm on the fence, but probably not. Life in Pieces. A single camera comedy about one big happy family and their sometimes awkward, often hilarious, and ultimately beautiful milestone moments as told by its various members. Of the three siblings, middle child Matt may have just found his true love. His coworker Colleen, his coddled youngest brother Greg, and his wife Jen are overwhelmed by the birth of their first child. And the eldest Heather and her husband Tim are dreading their impending emptiness so much they're considering having another baby. Their parents are Joan, the family's adoring matriarch, who would do anything for her kids, as long as she agrees with it, and John, the gregarious patriarch. Gregarious is a great word to have in all these.
Yeah.
Patriarch who's searching for ways to soften the blow of turning 70. As the family's lives unfold in four short stories each week, they try to savor these little pieces of time that flash by but stay with you forever, because these moments add up to what life's all about. I think it looks like a solid cast.
Yeah,
has an interesting storytelling mechanic if they're going to be doing four short stories each time.
Yeah. I'll watch it just because it's a little bit more related. Like, I'm kind of in that spot, like, in my life, you know, like, having kids and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
I thought you were going to say where you're turning 70.
Oh, yeah. Secretly, I'm 70. Asians just don't age.
It's amazing.
But there's that one scene where the doctor's like, never, under any circumstances, look down there.
Right.
And like we had that moment, you know, like most parents or like most new families do, like the doctor tells you not to do a whole bunch of stuff and you're like, I want to push the button. I want to push the button. Yeah. He gave me the button. I want to push it. And it's just like, you know, it's relatable. It's funny.
Do they actually tell you that? Not to.
They tell you, they give you a bunch of stuff not to do. And like some doc, like that's more of an elective thing.
Oh, okay.
You know, like it's not like if you look at it, you'll turn to stone or. You know,
so it's not like Medusa.
The Medusa yeah. principle.
It's, or, you know, it's not like Ark of the Covenant where right. if you look down there, you melt. But it's just like, I guess it's like a psychological thing, you know?
Many have described a vagina as the Ark of the Covenant. So.
I think it's cool seeing somebody like Colin Hanks in a comedy role. Mm-hmm. He was. I loved the season where he was in Dexter.
I did too.
And I love the versatility of a lot of these. Diane, I was, Weist.
Yeah.
Weist.
Yeah, she's awesome.
She is one of those people who, when she's in a dramatic role, is really solid,
mm-hmm.
but she can totally do comedy. James Brolin's the same way.
He's Hell yeah.
So I like when you get that contrast of people who are good dramatic actors and actresses who can then take on roles that are going to be comedic.
Yeah.
And I'm interested to see how they all, because a family dynamic's not always easy to put on.
No,
and this
not
is like an extended
all.
Family. So are we going to be able to watch this and believe that this is a family that you can believe is really going through the things they are? But it looks good.
I don't remember this guy's name, the dude from the newsroom, but he's pretty great too. Next one is Code Black, based on the award-winning documentary by Ryan. Oh, it's based on a documentary. Well, what a way to start. By Ryan McGarry, is a heart-pounding medical drama that takes place in the busiest, most notorious ER in the nation, where the staggering influx of patients can outweigh the limited resources available to the extraordinary doctors and nurses whose job is to treat them all, creating a condition known as Code Black. At the heart of the ER's controlled chaos is residency director, Dr. Leanne Rorish. Why would you choose Rorish as a last name for a character? It's so weird. Renowned for successfully performing high-risk procedures in center stage, the trauma area reserved for the most critical cases. Her four new first-year residents are Krista Lawrenson, Malaya Pineda, Mario Savetti, and Angus Layton. Leanne's confidant, Jesse Solander, is an amiable seen-it-all senior nurse who manages the residents. Also working in the ER is Dr. Neil Hudson, an excellent physician who sometimes disagrees with Leanne's cowboy approach, and Dr. Raleigh Guthrie, the energetic longest-serving attending. In center stage, life is measured in seconds, and these heroic doctors and nurses operate with speed and skill within an overwhelmed system to treat the crowds of people who are often there for one of two reasons, to die or to receive a life-saving miracle.
Here was my first problem. I didn't read that before I watched the trailers, then read the descriptions. Mm-hmm. First of all, we don't need another ER-style drama personally. Mm-hmm. But when I see Luis Guzman, who I love, I think he's awesome.
He's the best.
But he's so funny. As soon as he came out and you know, had it, he had the voice, you know, the mm-hmm. accent he does, I was ready to laugh.
Yep.
Because, I mean, I think of him in like playing the, you know, you want to waste some time, show them you're nuts, you
right,
know, from waiting.
Right, right.
So instantly I'm thinking this, and this is a serious role.
Right.
So you don't want to have somebody who's going to be this big senior know-it-all nurse in a serious show, and the first thing you see is you see him, and you're expecting him to be funny. And
even though he's definitely going to be, and they establish the roles of like he's the mommy and that the surgeon is the daddy. I like that kind of dynamic they're setting up.
It's kind of like it stinks of House a little bit, and by stinks, I mean stinks in the best way, you know? Like, it's you've got, like, the cowboy lead surgeon mm-hmm. who's, like, using all these experimental techniques.
Of course.
And going outside the lines, and it's just, like, not giving a fuck as long as I solve the problem or save the life, you know? And, like, I saw Luis Guzman's character as, like, kind of the levity that maybe a drama like this
right,
would need.
Exactly.
Because it's like everything from like the filter that they use on the camera in the emergency room to like everybody else in like all of the established like nurses and doctors in the room, like felt like super heavy. And so like to have Luis Guzman there to be like, I'm your mommy, you know, and who's your dad? Like that's your
who's,
daddy.
Who's your daddy and what does he do?
Who's your daddy and what does he do? But yeah, like I thought it was a good bit of levity in an otherwise heavy drama.
Yeah.
And, like I like that sort of like the characters, like how they portray the characters. Like one guy has no self-confidence, even though he's been trained as a doctor, just like everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have like Marcia Gay Harden, who's like the grizzled veteran of the emergency room who has seen it all. It's like death, but death still somehow impacts her in a way.
Right.
And then you have like the mom who lost her son or lost her child and is like making this her way of reconnecting or somehow reconnecting with happiness or whatever it is. Like that character development I kind of like. So I'm in. I mean, I haven't seen like a emergency room procedural since ER.
The only medical show I've ever been able to get into is Scrubs. So this is not going to stand a chance. Yeah. Limitless, based on the feature film, is a fast-paced drama about Brian Finch, who discovers the brain-boosting power of the mysterious drug NZT and is coerced by the FBI into using his extraordinary cognitive abilities to solve complex cases for them. Working closely with Brian and the major case squad, in New York City is Special Agent Rebecca Harris, a formidable investigator with a dark past, and Special Agent Boyle, a former military officer and Rebecca's confidant. They report to Special Agent in charge, Naz, I'll just shorten it there, a canny manipulator of the reins of power. Unbeknownst to the FBI, Brian also has a clandestine relationship with Senator Edward Mora, who is Bradley Cooper coming back from the movie, a presidential hopeful and regular user of NZT who has plans of his own for his new protege. Fueled now with a steady supply of NZT that enables him to use 100% of his brain capacity, Brian is more effective than all of the FBI agents combined, making him a criminal's worst nightmare and the greatest asset the Bureau has ever possessed. I really liked Limitless, even though it certainly had its flaws. I still love the premise that set up, and I like to see that it's going to be continued here. I also like that the series is a continuation of the movie instead of a reimagining or recasting. Like, they didn't recast Bradley Cooper's role. They're just extending that story that they already set up. Right. Plus, Jennifer Carpenter.
Yeah. That helped. She was awesome in Dexter.
Yeah, totally.
Became a huge fan. Actually, she was great in Exorcism of Emily Rose.
Oh, yeah?
And then that was, like, the first time I'd ever seen her in anything serious where she took a lead. So I think that she's going to be awesome in this, and I think this is going to be a good show, even though movie properties don't always extend well to the smaller screen.
No, they don't always.
But it sounds like because they're not trying to reboot or retell, or it's, you know, they're continuing on with it. The only thing is, will be people who haven't invested in the initial source, the movie, are they going to be possibly turned away because it is a continuation of some sort?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Don't know.
The only part of the trailer that kind of took me out of it was like that part where he's like, what if you knew exactly how much hand strength you had?
Right.
And then just starts dropping down from the building. I mean, that was kind of like, yeah, okay, you have the brain of a god, but are you really, do you have superpowers now?
Right,
really?
Right. Yeah, just because you know how much hand strength you have doesn't mean you have enough.
Right.
Yeah. I'm totally down for this show, though. Yeah, I'm excited for it. I'm not going to read the full description for the next one because we have talked about it at length on a past show when we reviewed the full pilot for Supergirl. And plus, guys, Supergirl.
Yep.
So what do you think?
Yeah, definitely in.
Yep.
Yep.
The leaked first episode is great.
Yep.
I like that. Yeah, perhaps they're not doing the Kara costume that sometimes they've done with like the half shirt and whatnot. But I mean, it's a great uniform. It's a great translation. They're not dulling the colors down. We're getting blue and red and gold. We're not getting, because it's CW versus the DC cinematic. So it's colorful. It's cool. I think she's going to be good. I think she's going to do well with the
role. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we said during our review that it's not a perfect pilot. No pilot really is, aside from like Lost, but it is promising for sure. So, and it's freaking superheroes, so I kind of have to. I'm obligated by code.
We are obligated by geek contract.
That's right.
I will admit that what you guys said a few episodes back when you talked about it, about James Olsen, I was a little, that was a little strange.
Yeah.
Oh, no, only the big guy calls me Jimmy. No, everybody called you Jimmy.
Everybody.
That was a little, unless he's, you know, hey, it's a new place. I'm going to, you know, you're a brand new guy, going to reestablish my, I don't know.
It just seemed like a far cry from the character that we all know.
Yep.
It's in name only connected to Jimmy Olsen. Moving on to NBC. There's no preview for this, but we have to talk about Coach.
Yep.
We all know Coach. This time it continues. He is picking up 18 years later when the retired coach gets back in the game to assist his son, who was just hired as head coach at an Ivy League university in Pennsylvania, where they know nothing about sports. Between dealing with the eggheads on campus and his hostile daughter-in-law at home, Coach will soon learn that he's not in Minnesota anymore. Talk about a Hail Mary. What do you think?
Am I the only one that saw like everything from NBC and thought NBC stands for nothing but crap? Like, You kidding? Like, I loved Coach. Coach was a good show. I just don't know if it's going to do so well now. Like,
how do you recapture that magic?
Yeah. I'm hoping they do because I love the original.
It was a great show.
But you're not going to, I mean, you may be able to get the guy who played Dauber, but Jerry Van Dyke is no longer
right,
around.
Right.
He recently passed. And it's just, yeah, I loved that. I loved Jerry Van Dyke's character on that. I thought that the woman who played Christine, who went back to like old 50s TV sitcoms mm-hmm. as a kid, I mean, it was a great cast. It was an ensemble cast. I'm hoping that they get that dynamic because it was mm-hmm. such a good show.
Yeah.
And there's not many sitcoms that are on right now that I really have embraced.
No,
so it'd be nice
mostly
to be having
not
some,
good.
Yeah, it'd be yeah. cool to have one that makes you, oh, all right, this feels like a sitcom.
Right, right. Yeah, I'm totally willing to give it a shot for sure. And this is one where the franchise helps for mm-hmm. instead of Uncle Buck. people are talking. There's a lot of ones that NBC does not have previews for. You can see these all at thegeekgeneration.com. But the next one that does is a show called People Are Talking. If you can think it, they will say it. From producer Will Packer and director Pam Fryman comes this unabashed new comedy about two diverse couples who are both neighbors and best friends. As they go through life side by side, they can't help but analyze and obsess about everything. From topics like sex and race to the fact that the trusted new babysitter might just be a porn star, nothing is out of bounds for this wildly outspoken foursome.
I watched that. First thing was, oh, it's Zach from Saved by the Bell. And then your babysitter's in porn. Okay, well, that's
so
definitely
already getting into some more racy
yeah,
topics.
Yeah, that's definitely not your typical NBC shitcom, so we'll...
Shitcom?
Yes, so...
That was not a stumble.
No, it was definitely crafted.
I see what you did there.
But I'll give it a shot because just the whole you find out your babysitter was in porn, that right there, all right.
That's funny.
It is funny.
Yeah.
I like that they brought back the girl from Being Human, the ghost girl.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I think she's Mark Paul Gosselaar's wife in this mm-hmm. one. So, I don't know.
Well, it looks like it might be funny. Sadly, this trailer was a reminder to me that Franklin Bash isn't on the air anymore.
Yeah, right.
Because I just love that show. Moving on past even more into the dramas from executive producer Greg Berlanti, which should be a name that you are very familiar with as he is behind the majority of the CW superhero shows, comes Blindspot. A vast international plot explodes when a beautiful Jane Doe, completely covered in mysterious, intricate tattoos, is discovered naked in Times Square with no memory of who she is or how she got there. But there's one tattoo that is impossible to miss. The name of FBI agent Kurt Weller emblazoned across her back. Jane, Agent Weller, and the rest of the FBI quickly realize that each mark on her body is a crime to solve, leading them closer to the truth about her identity and the mysteries to be revealed. Interesting premise. Anyone else have shades of Memento going on here?
Oh, definitely. A little bit.
You know, yeah. I think NBC thinks that this is going to be their surprise hit of the year. Because if you watch NBC programming over the last couple of weeks, they've been showing the trailer of In Times Square where there's the bag and it unzips.
Yeah.
Ad nauseum. They've been showing it a whole lot. So I really think that they feel it's a strong property.
Well, with Berlanti behind it and the success he's recently had, they're definitely supporting the crap out of it.
I certainly think it looks intriguing. I'm probably going to start watching it and we'll see if it keeps me.
Hmm.
This trailer was like the trailer before every YouTube video I watched last
week. Oh, yeah.
It literally all of them, like on my phone, on my computer, everywhere. Like it just relentless. Like I've seen her belly button so many times, like from the trailer.
They might be burying themselves before it even gets started because this was the problem with Whitney.
Really?
Yeah. When the Whitney Cummings sitcom came on, it was so oversaturated that people were sick of her by the time the show even came on the air.
Yeah. It looks good. I mean, you know, I don't think NBC has anything like this going right now.
I don't think so.
So, it looks pretty good. I like her as Lady Sif.
Yep.
So,
you know, I couldn't help watching this without thinking about how agonizing it must be in makeup every time they have to shoot because they have to put all the tattoos back.
Yep.
Well, I mean, they might have that transfer paper, you know, so it's like printed out ahead of time.
Let's hope so.
Because otherwise, who the fuck is doing that?
Exactly.
Every day?
Like, exactly.
Insane.
Yeah. Okay, guys, we got to shoot all 24 hours of today and a little bit into tomorrow because we're not redoing those damn tattoos all the time.
Basically.
But I'd be curious to give it a shot. We shall see. The next one is Heartbreaker, based on the real life and achievements of Dr. Kathy Magliotto. This unique character-driven medical drama follows Dr. Alex Pantier, an outspoken world-renowned heart transplant surgeon and one of the few women in her field. Stubborn and fearless, Alex always operates on her own terms. Operates. She revels in a racy personal life that's a full-time job in itself, manages the daily demands of skeptical faculty and dutiful interns, and pushes the boundaries of medical science and impressive new heights in Grey's Anatomy.
Basically. It's like...
Is this any different?
It looks...
Not that I've seen Grey's Anatomy, I just...
It basically takes like the social elements of Grey's Anatomy and some of like... the scientific sort of pushing the boundaries elements of House. Mm-hmm. You kind of just smash them together. And they're like, who do we plug into the lead? Let's make it a woman to make it more up to date or something.
Right.
Like, I don't, like, it doesn't, it's the same fucking show, guys.
Yeah.
It really feels like something watching the trailer. I was just, this is going to get lost in the shuffle.
Yeah.
It's just, there's nothing outwardly.
And what's with all the medical shows all of a sudden?
Right.
Yeah. I feel like it happens in waves, right? We get mm-hmm. like cop procedurals.
Totally.
And then you get like the hospital procedurals and the medical procedurals.
There were a bunch of sci-fi shows one year.
Yeah. Yep. And then they saw that it didn't really work. So right. They're like, let's go back to cops and doctors, guys.
Yeah.
Cause we didn't talk about it, but there's going to be Chicago Med as one. It's another right, show that's right. going to be.
It's just overdone. Yeah. Moving from one I don't care about to one I'm very excited for. From original creator Tim Kring, the supernatural phenomena begins again with a fresh crop of inspiring heroes who take on the ultimate struggle between those with extraordinary abilities and those with nefarious motives to hunt and harness their powers. Epic adventures await these newly empowered allies as they cross paths with some of the original characters such as HRG and Hiro Nakamura, unlocking the mysterious fate of the universe and their place within it. Heroes friggin' reborn.
Yeah,
excellent.
That's since we put this up, I think the guy who plays Matt Parkman mm-hmm. has recently.
Yes, he has. Greg Runberg.
Yep. So he's going to be in a recurring role as well, and I'm excited to see him because he was like, besides Hero, he was like one of my favorite characters.
Yeah, he was great
because he was like, you know, he's a psychic, he's a cop, like that could go so many different places.
He was definitely the linchpin of season one,
right? Mm-hmm. He kind of tied everything together.
Which I'm so tempted to go back and watch Heroes because. Mm-hmm. Season one of Heroes, and I've said it on the show many times, is one of the best TV seasons ever.
Heroes was the biggest victim overall of the writer's strike.
Oh my God.
Because that was what happened in season two. It was, we have to wrap it up, and they cut it short.
Yep.
And so everything was like, well, we're just going to bury this. And then that was it. And that was what ruined pretty much the momentum of the show.
Yeah.
Heroes, when it came on, that was everybody watched it.
Hell
everybody
yeah.
talked about it. It was just from the first episode, you just had to watch it.
And yep.
In huge one of the trailers, hit. They show Hero with the hair slicked back with mm-hmm. the sword.
Yep.
And there's a younger Asian woman who at one point they show her with the sword. So I don't know if she's his apprentice or if there's going to be a tie-in with them, but that's pretty cool. That just having Hero back is enough to make me go, I'm watching it.
Mm-hmm. As soon as they said, I think HRG was the first returning cast member. As soon as they said that, I was like, yes,
yes,
because he too is such a huge part of it. And the Haitian is going to be in it again.
Oh, I love that character.
Oh, there's so much awesomeness. I have a feeling that this is going to get big again, and we're going to see a little bit more of that original cast return here and there, which would be phenomenal.
No complaints.
I'd like to see like a lot of them come back.
I would too.
Even Hayden Panettiere, like
she's probably the least likely because of where she is now, considering. But
that was, I mean, you ended, that was another show with a cliffhanger that you ended it with her going on the national news saying, hey, I've got these superpowers. Look, boom.
Right.
And that was like, oh, now the world knows there's heroes.
Right.
And guess what? The show's done. We're canceling it. What?
Which they're definitely addressing because the promos are saying, where are all the heroes?
Yeah.
Like it's been outed.
Yeah.
So, I'm so excited.
Yeah, I'm super excited for that one.
Moving on to The Player. From the executive producers of The Blacklist and starring Wesley Snipes and Philip Winchester comes an action-packed Las Vegas thriller about a former military operative turned security expert who is drawn into a high-stakes game where an organization of wealthy individuals gamble on his ability to stop some of the biggest crimes imaginable from playing out. Can he take them down from the inside and get revenge for the death of his wife? Or is it true what they say? The house always wins.
Let's just call this show somebody at NBC owed Wesley Snipes a favor and gave him a job. Because, I mean, I'm sort of on board, like, a little bit, you know? Because, I mean, the premise is interesting, but if they don't work that mechanic just right,
right.
You know, with the whole house and the three roles that are always in play,
mm-hmm.
like, if you don't work that just right, this is, I don't know what this show is going to, like, what it is other than just an action-based show.
See, I didn't even, from watching the trailer, like, reading that, is what told me that people are actually gambling on what he's doing.
Right.
I didn't get that at all from the preview.
Yeah, I thought they were just like, we gamble on crime, but who's we? Like,
yeah.
I thought it was just like Wesley Snipes or something.
Right, right. It was very strange. But yeah. I like a good action story of like one man versus the world.
Yeah.
I mean, I've said I'm a big fan of The Blacklist by the same producers. I'm interested to see. I mean, I would think it would be more successful if along the way during the season, he doesn't always win. Like, he does fail. So people betting against him.
Totally.
And that probably won't happen. But I think that would certainly flesh it out and make it more real and more interesting, where there are things where he just doesn't fail. And or maybe people who have stakes in this thing are playing against him. So I bet against him. Maybe they're using power and influence to try to, you know, get in his way and keep him from succeeding.
I hope they're as thoughtful as you are, because that sounds way more interesting. Yeah. But I think it's a show I'd check out for sure.
Yeah.
It feels cool. Fox is the next one up. And the first show is very, I don't even know what to call it, because it says it's a comedy horror series. The girls of Kappa House are dying for new pledges. Scream Queens is a new killer comedy horror series from Ryan Murphy, Brad Falchuk, and Ian Brennan, the Emmy and Golden Globe award-winning executive producers of Glee and American Horror Story. Wait, what? Maybe that explains this show. Wallace University is rocked by a string of murders. Kappa House, the most sought-after sorority for pledges, is ruled with an iron fist in a pink glove by its queen bitch. Okay, when they're using queen bitch in the description, they're already, like, turning me off.
Yeah.
Chancel Oberlin, but when Anti-Kappa Dean Munch decrees that sorority pledging must be open to all students and not just the school's silver-spooned elite, all hell is about to break loose as a devil-clad killer begins wreaking havoc, claiming one victim one episode at a time. Wait, so does that mean we already know only one victim per episode? Are they already setting rules that are going to make this way too predictable?
Mm-hmm.
Sweet. Part black comedy, part slasher flick, Scream Queens is a modern take on the classic whodunit, in which every character has a motive for murder, or could easily be the next blood-soaked casualty.
Nope.
See, I actually have said, now normally I would not go for this type of show, but considering Brad Falchuk's involved, you know, so you've got that tie into American Horror Story, you've got Emma Roberts, who was great on American Horror Story.
I love Emma Roberts.
And you've got Jamie Lee Curtis, who can be awesome, and she's one of the original Scream Queens. It could be an entertaining twist. I think, like, I like the whole deal when they're showing everybody has to be in the sorority. They're definitely showing people who are would never be allowed into a sorority.
Mm-hmm.
It looks tapped. I don't know that it'll be good, but I don't know that it'll be bad.
I just don't know what it's going for.
Yeah.
I think it's that whole where they're saying part black comedy. I think it's going to be a very black comedy. I think that's really what it's going to be.
It's having an identity crisis. Like,
yeah.
It kind of feels like they just passed a theme hat around the room and, like, pick out two themes, guys. Comedy.
I wonder if
horror.
It'll be better on FX than Fox.
I'm thinking similarly.
If they put it on FX, I think it would be a very black comedy. I think it would be really funny and pretty racy. Being on Fox
waters it down.
It's going to be watered down. Yeah. That's my worry.
I agree. Grandfathered is the next one. What's the fastest way to put the brakes on a cruise-controlled bachelor lifestyle? Fatherhood? Guess again. Oh. Television icon John Stamos stars in a new comedy about the ultimate bachelor who discovers he's not only a father, but a grandfather. Successful restaurateur and man about town, Jimmy Martino is used to being the most suave, most handsome, and most single person in the room. All that changes with the surprise appearance of Jimmy's adult son, Gerald, and his baby daughter, Edie. Now Jimmy has to unlearn a lifetime of blissful selfishness and grapple with the fact that he went straight from single to grandfather in 6 seconds flat. Keeping tabs on Jimmy is Gerald's mother and Jimmy's former girlfriend, rocker chick-turned-mother Sarah. Equally concerned about how Jimmy will manage these new developments is Jimmy's restaurant family, especially assistant manager Annalise and chef Ken. Can Jimmy teach Gerald to be a little more like him in order to win the affection of Edie's hot mess of a mom, Vanessa? Will Jimmy and Sarah fall for each other all over again, even though she's the one thing he never dates? A woman his own age? Oh, no. And who's higher maintenance, Jimmy or the baby? Grandfathered is an unconventional, sophisticated comedy about coming of age at any age.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, how does John Stamos had a very public, since this was released, a very public DUI, which always takes a knock on your rep as a family man in a show. And then he's also supposedly tied into that whole Fuller House.
He is.
That's going to be made. So if this is a hit, what happens there? You know, although he's not going to be the main focus of that show.
Right.
It's going to be more the I think DJ and Kimmy Gibbler. I hate that I know that. I'm so not a fan
of
that show.
We all do that.
But how does that, again, you know, here's your starring role. If this takes off, you know, does that end up just being like a cameo thing now and again?
Right.
I like Paget Brewster.
Yeah, she's great.
And just if you didn't watch the video, the description is just so full of names.
It is. It really is.
Like, it just seems like there's so many characters. Like, I hope it just doesn't get too confusing. Like, I don't know.
I'm on the fence about this one. It might be good.
Yeah.
I'm willing on John Stamos to give it a shot, but it's comedies have it tough these days. I don't know what it is. They're even decreased compared to, like, the productivity of sitcoms that we saw turned out every year. Mm-hmm. This year, there's definitely less comedies than probably ever before.
Yeah.
Because it's just getting tougher and tougher. The Grinder. How many TV lawyers does it take to try a real life case in a real life courtroom? One, and his name is The Grinder. Starring Emmy Award nominee Rob Lowe, The Grinder is a new comedy about a famous TV lawyer at a crossroads. When his legal series ends, he decides to move back home and join his family's real law firm, despite having no formal education, no bar certification, no license to practice, and no experience in an actual courtroom. Dean Sanderson spent 8 seasons playing the title role on the hit legal drama The Grinder. Now he's moving back to his home. Wait, are they? What? Why is this in here again? This is the same stuff that we already established in the beginning of this paragraph. So he moves with his brother, who's a real life attorney, who's going to take over the firm. Doesn't take long for Dean to start interjecting his TV drama into every aspect of Stewart's life, both in the courtroom and at home, impacting Stewart's wife and Dean's high school sweetheart. Blah, 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 blah. You get it.
One, you named the show after a gay dating app. So people are going to get confused as fuck. Two, I fucking hate this. Whenever they like make a TV show about lawyers and they're like, there's this guy and he's got these weird real life skills that somehow translate into right. his ability to practice law. It's like, no, motherfucker. You know how you get a job in law? They have to research you. They have to look you up in the fucking, in the board of bar examiners, and they have to look you up on the like state website. You have to have like certification. You can't just be like, oh, I'm smart. I can be a lawyer. Like, you know,
but I think part of, you know, first of all, with Fred Savage's character, did you guys ever watch on USA? There was a series that he was the star of called Working.
I did not, but it looked good.
It was kind of an office comedy. And he was really good in it. And that character looks similar to this character. I think that in this one, I think it's not so much the people in the law, in the courts and whatever. It's more along, he's going to be like a PR person. So for the clueless people who are, oh yeah, I saw him every week. He's a lawyer on TV. He must know law. I think that's what it's going to be more in the courts. From what I took from that, you know, the judges are looking at him like a complete ass. Like, you know, who are you? You don't, other lawyers are looking at him the same way. I think where your concern is it is going to be him when there's a case. It's going to be him that comes up with the linchpin to win the case. I think it looks like it might be entertaining, but I can see we have a lawyer in the room, so
yeah.
I can see where that would be annoying.
Like Suits on USA, Suits is like a pretty good show, but the fact that like somebody with photographic memory is somehow working in like this super high powered law firm, it's unrealistic. It pisses the fuck out of me because, oh, you're blessed with this biological gift. Good for you. Here's like $250,000 in a road to partnership. It's like, fuck off.
Well, yeah, but you also described like that probably could happen if someone has like that kind of a gift. But that's the same thing as saying like, oh, you're super attractive, you're a model, and you you go right past go, do not collect 200, collect 200,000 instead. Right. Yeah, it's just this gift that gives them an easy out.
Yeah, but whatever.
Easy success.
Not watching it, Grindr.
My thought after watching this was that Kumail apparently got a TV promotion from legal assistant to full-on lawyer.
Yeah, that's right.
Because Franklin Abash.
No, wasn't he? No, he was a lawyer in Franklin and Bash.
But he didn't really practice. He just stayed at home and he was an assistant because of it.
He was like a consultant or something. Yeah.
Freaking love Kumail.
We love you, Kumail.
The Guide to Surviving Life. Wouldn't it be great to have a friend who has made all the mistakes in life there are to make and then tells you exactly where he went wrong so you don't have to? I think that's fine. That's enough information. It actually does look pretty funny, though.
Yeah. you have a thought, I mean, the premise of it alone is making mistakes is funny.
Yeah.
And like having a guy do it for you is even funnier.
So. One of those shows where you watch and just are thankful that it's not you.
Yeah. Like, I'm feeling pretty bad about my life. Let's go watch this other guy fuck up for 30 minutes.
I thought those were called soap operas. Oh, wait, no, those are an hour. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Looks kind of funny. Next one on the list here is Border Town, which, wait, what? This was in last year's.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, this was in last year's fall TV preview, which means it just got pushed off this far. From Family Guy's Mark Hinteman, and that's deceptive. Because they, when they put Family Guy in there, they're thinking, oh, this is a Seth MacFarlane cartoon, but it's not. A new animated comedy about two families living in a southwest desert town on the U.S.-Mexico border. The series takes a satirical look at the cultural shifts occurring in America, where the U.S. Census forecasts that by 2017, ethnic minorities will become the majority. Yeah.
Alex Borstein is in it, too.
Right.
Which is big Family Guy.
Yep.
My big thing was the trailer had some stuff that was definitely funny. I got some laughs out of it, but ultimately it still felt like, well, even though it's not Seth MacFarlane,
right.
It still felt like Family Guy, American Dad, yeah, Cleveland, etc.
Mm-hmm.
That was the only thing. It'll probably be funny, but what we've seen is unless you're Family Guy, most of those shows will last a season or two, maybe three, and then they're done.
Well, Bob's Burgers was amazing.
Yeah.
Still is. And that's been on for.
I'm in the minority who's not a giant fan.
Oh, I love it so much.
My wife loves it and I don't, so it's even worse.
Like this show will do okay if they walk right up to the line
of
appropriateness.
Yeah.
And they kind of dance that line. But that's going to be the hard part because how are you going to do that from week to week? I mean, especially like with changes in the news and everything. I mean, people are going to be extra sensitive or not as sensitive from week to week. Like, I mean, it's going to be hard to walk that line while the ground is changing underneath you.
The line at the edge of Border Town.
I see what you did.
I'll
there.
Go home.
Rob Logan, professional comedian, everybody.
I don't even like the animation style. Like, it's Family Guy-ish, but cheaper. Like,
yeah, it looks
flatter.
Very clunky.
Yeah, I don't like it. I'm not in. Minority Report. Fox Drama Time. The future is coming based on, and this is a second one with a movie tie-in, based on the international blockbuster film by executive producer Steven Spielberg and the first of his films to be adapted for television. Minority Report follows the unlikely partnership between a man haunted by the future and a cop haunted by her past as they race to stop the worst crimes of the year 2065 before they happen. Yay for things set in the future. And a little further than just like tomorrow. Set in Washington, D.C., it is 10 years after the demise of Precrime, a law enforcement agency tasked with identifying and eliminating criminals before their crimes were committed. To carry out this brand of justice, the agency used three precogs. You guys saw Minority Report. I'm just rehashing the pilot there. So in other words, precog breaks out, or not breaks out, or escapes, it grows up, and ends up working with the cops.
Okay.
That's what it seems like.
I mean, good for Megan Good. She's made it onto network TV. I mean, she's not like a fantastic actress, but
I don't even know who that is.
She's in like a lot of like she's in a lot of black comedies.
Okay.
She's been into like Tyler Perry stuff.
Okay.
But, I mean, she started off as being hot and then I guess somehow along the way she became a good actress or a decent actress. So. I mean, it kind of sort of takes the place of, you know, that Carl Urban show that we liked.
Yeah.
What's the name?
Almost Human.
Almost Human. Kind of sort of a little bit. A little bit, maybe.
I don't know. That was just going to get more and more high pitched as we went on. I wasn't expecting for this to take the route that they did, but I think it's different enough that I kind of dig it.
Yeah, I like future stuff.
Yeah.
I liked Minority Report.
Okay. Rosewood. Meet the Beethoven of private pathologists. From executive producer Todd Harthen, Rosewood is the story of Dr. Beaumont Roseman Jr., the most brilliant private pathologist in Miami. Using his wildly sophisticated autopsy lab, he performs four higher autopsies to uncover clues that the Miami PD can't see. His new partner in crime is Detective Villa, a Miami PD detective with attitude and demons to spare. While she's impressed by Rosewood's incredible abilities, his constant optimism is more annoying than it is infectious. But somehow, week to week, this unlikely tag team will solve many crimes together. Joining Rosewood in his practice are his sister and toxicology queen, Pippi, and DNA specialist Tara Millie Izikoff, a.k.a. TMI, who is Pippi's fiancé. Plagued with his own set of medical ailments, Rosewood sees that every moment of life should be embraced and lived to the fullest, and those moments of victims' lives that will never be are what drive him the most.
I like Morris Chestnut.
I do, too.
I like him a lot, but instantly... We see this opening where he sees this crime scene and he like marches through like blah, 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 blah. This happened. And he's like throwing his arms out.
Yeah.
He came off so unlikable and smarmy. I was like, ugh, I don't like that character at all. And the last time we've seen Miami PD,
yep.
It's been Dexter.
Yeah.
So I instantly saw the boat style. Yep. Whatever, and I was like, yep. I don't want to see somebody marching around talking like that. I want to see it like.
I want to
like,
see Dexter.
I want to see exactly. But it looks hokey. He seemed way too unbelievable with that style. You would never have somebody walk through a, you know, basically whipping his dick out and saying, here's what happened.
Yeah. See, yeah. For that same reason, I can see this being a very popular character.
It probably will be. I just didn't like
it. All the guys want to be him and all the girls want to be him.
And again, I want him to go back and be on the V series that they canceled way too long.
That.
He was awesome on that. Yeah.
What was that, Rob? All the girls want to be.
I don't know. I kind of trailed off on there.
I saw you going somewhere and you're like, yeah,
I slowly turned it to Bam. Maybe. I lost my train of thought totally and then just tried to cover it up. Thank you for calling me out on it. can we talk about something exciting?
Yes.
Very exciting. Like the friggin' X-Files.
I wish we had the video stream so you could see me going, yes.
Metal. Yes. All you need to know is that it's the X-Files.
Yep.
I'm excited.
The X-Files for me when I was a kid was like nightmare fuel.
Yeah.
It could be. There were some really tombs.
Like there was some
that was so awesome.
Fucked up stuff.
In oh, yeah. Totally.
Totally.
Like even like the opening sequence to X-Files, yep. Like that just.
Oh,
like,
I hate the opening sequence and I hate the theme song.
Yeah. I hate that. Like, oh.
Still, that's yeah. The hardest part about rewatching the series.
Right.
Is just sitting through the opening because I hate it.
Oh my God. The hallway and
yeah.
Fuck it.
I actually was one of the people who was a big enough fan when it happened that they had one year that it was a Fox sponsored X-Files convention.
Oh,
and
geez.
I went to it. And it was awesome. It was really awesome. It was right before the first movie came out. So it was the first time you could see the trailer for the movie and it was top secret and It was awesome. But even if it's only 6 episodes, I'd like to see a lot more. I'd like to see a whole season.
Right.
But if you're going to give me 6 episodes and it's well written.
Well, take
and
it.
You've got, and the other thing I like about it is they've got, in addition to obviously David Duchovny, Gillian Anderson, she was phenomenal on Hannibal. You've got Mitch Pileggi back as Amy Skinner. They also have announced that you have Robert Patrick and Annabeth Gish back.
Oh.
The last couple seasons where they phased out when David Duchovny was missing or Fox Mulder was missing and Gillian Anderson was dealing with all, you know, the cancer and all these things that have come up and, you know, the having the child. They had John Doggett and Monica Reyes, mm-hmm. who while a lot of people didn't like because they figured they were the replacement for Mulder and Scully. They were really good too. It was just, it wasn't what people were used to with the X-Files, but they're going to be in it as well. So, I mean, they're really getting the majority of like the important characters back, which
that's
is
interesting.
So awesome. I'm so psyched about it. When they ever announced that Robert Patrick would be back, because I love him,
mm-hmm.
and he's such kind of a peripheral X-Files character versus a mainstream character, that they're getting them back, even if it's just for something to reference where they were kind of monitoring the X-Files. It's awesome. It feels so like it's going to be authentic X-Files and not like some little celebrated reboot just to pat you on the back and placate you.
Yep.
Hey, Rob, how do you feel about Joel McHale in the X-Files?
Not a fan.
I know you have some opinions about
not
that.
Not a fan. Was I not verbal enough before?
A little bit. Let's just remind everybody.
Not a fan.
Not a fan.
Next one is the Frankenstein Code. What would you do with a second chance? From executive producer, writer Rand Ravitch and executive producer Howard Gordon comes the Frankenstein Code, a modern reimagining of the Mary Shelley classic about a man brought back to life by two scientists playing God. 75-year-old Jimmy Pritchard is a shell of his former self. A drinker, a womanizer, and a father who always put work before family, Pritchard was forced to resign as LA County Sheriff for corrupt conduct more than a decade ago. Now, some 15 unkind years later, he is killed when he stumbles upon a robbery at the home of FBI agent Duval Pritchard, one of his 3 children. But death is surprisingly short for Jimmy, who is brought back to life by billionaire tech genius twins Mary Goodwin and her brother Otto, founders of the social networking empire Looking Glass. Resurrected as a younger version of himself with physical abilities of which he never dreamed, a reanimated Pritchard is given a second chance at life. What will he do with it? Will he seek vengeance against those who killed him? Will he try to repair the damage he did to his family? Will he embrace a new sense of purpose or fall prey to old temptations?
Interesting. Although there is a movie like this coming out.
Selfless?
Yeah, Selfless. Yeah. Like, it's basically the same thing.
Yeah.
A little bit. Maybe it's more.
I think Selfless is more about the conflicting consciousness.
Right.
Good producers, though.
Yeah.
You've got X-Files and you've got Homeland, which both had. Homeland has a really strong following, and obviously we just talked about X-Files, so
right.
Could be helpful.
It looks from the preview like he has to jump back in the tank every day, like they have a ticking clock that he can only be out for so long. Mm-hmm. I can't deal with that kind of anxiety.
You only have 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Google Maps says it's going to take 20 minutes to get to the tank.
Like, it was tough enough playing through Mario levels when I had a clock ticking and I only had so long. I can't deal with, like, someone's going to die if they don't get back in this tank. Oh, it's too much. Too much. Lastly for Fox, Lucifer. The Devil Has Come to Los Angeles, based upon the characters created by Neil Gaiman, Sam Keith, and Mike Dringenberg for DC Entertainment's Vertigo imprint. Lucifer is the story of the original fallen angel. Bored and unhappy as the Lord of Hell, Lucifer Morningstar has abandoned his throne and retired to L.A., where he owns Lux, an upscale nightclub. Charming, charismatic, and devilishly handsome, Lucifer is enjoying his retirement, indulging in a few of his favorite things, wine, women, and song, when a beautiful pop star is brutally murdered outside of Lux. For the first time in roughly 10 billion years, he feels something awaken deep within him as a result of this murder. Compassion? Sympathy? The very thought disturbs him, as well as his best friend and confidant. Everyone has a damn confidant. Mazikeen, a.k.a. Maze, a fierce demon in the form of a beautiful young woman. The murder attracts the attention of LAPD homicide detective Chloe Dancer, who initially is dismissive of Lucifer. But she becomes intrigued by his talent for drawing out people's secrets and his desire to dispense justice, doling out punishment to those who deserve it. Etc., etc.
Well, Neil Gaiman's one of the best comic book writers there was.
True.
And I know he's also written novels as well. If they keep to the source, I didn't read the Vertigo title, but it definitely was one of those people really were fond of it. They really liked it. If they can keep things sort of tight to that and not have to, it's on Fox. They don't have to go too CW with it, if you will.
Right.
It could be good, especially with Constantine not surviving on NBC. It's nice to have like a dark comic property on TV.
Yeah.
So, you know, Vertigo was famous for their dark kind of titles, and for them to have one on Fox, I think I'll give it a shot. We'll see what happens with it. It could go one of two ways.
Yeah. I was wondering how this would be popular when Constantine wasn't, but at the same time, this is Fox.
Mm-hmm.
They've always been a little weirder than the others.
I mean, you couldn't have Constantine smoking cigarettes.
Right.
Because it was on NBC, and that was part of who he was. I mean, he was smoking cigarettes despite knowing he had lung cancer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was part of just to show the cynicism of him, and they didn't do that. So,
right.
I mean, then that was considered by like his fan, like the fans of Constantine, as one of his major like characterizations.
Sure.
So, yeah.
Sure. Moving lastly to the CW, only three shows to talk about here. The first one is Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. Rebecca Bunch is a successful, driven, and possibly canceled new show. Do I have to finish that one?
No.
No? Okay.
Is the trailer indicating what the show's going to be like? The trailer had weird musical numbers. Not my type of show at all, but
no.
I was just like, this is bizarre. Like, they're breaking out into musical numbers.
Yeah, but didn't Galahad get renewed or something?
It might have. Mm.
That weird-ass friggin' thing that we thought was going to get canceled, like, faster than anything else.
I made it 20 minutes into that show, and just like, nope, this is...
Oh, awful. I couldn't it even was, make it through
it
the preview.
On Hulu, and I said, oh, let me try it. Nope.
Watch us 6 months from now be eating our words. Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, I'm sorry
smash
to say,
new hit.
Is fucking awesome.
Yeah.
That giant pretzel, Jesus Christ.
it looks terrible.
Yeah.
I don't know who this is for. Is it for the Glee crowd? Or
I think so.
Maybe.
Yeah, okay. That's actually probably right who it's aimed at.
Yeah, but it also is not a very sympathetic or likable lead character. Like, the character is just terrible. DC's Legends of Tomorrow. Hell yeah.
Yep.
We've talked about this on the show plenty of times. I think you get it by now. Team of heroes from Arrow and Flash. I'm definitely giving it a shot, even though I think they might be starting to spread themselves a little bit too thin.
I am psyched they're bringing in Arthur Darvill.
Yes.
As a time traveler.
Yes.
Which is awesome for those Doctor Who fans.
Totally.
And the fact that the big bad of Legends of Tomorrow is going to be Vandal Savage.
Yes.
Which is great. I mean, what a perfect, if you're going to have Arthur Darvill's telling the Legends of Tomorrow, oh no, you guys are going to be legends in the future. But you're dealing with this, you know, what a great big bad for a series. Somebody who just doesn't age.
From the trailer, it seems like they're going to be time hopping.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which definitely is why they might not cross over as much with the other shows, because they're going to be out of time all the time or something. Containment's a show about a virus.
Didn't we see this as Outbreak?
I thought so. This might be the first preview out of all of them that I just stopped watching probably like a minute into it. I was like, yeah, I get it.
It's definitely anti-CW, though. It's not that white bread type romance that they try to put out. Or even, you think about even the superhero stuff have those underlying romance.
Well, thing, these people appear to be over 30.
Yeah. Five sexy singles are fighting a virus in that post-apocalyptic world.
One capuchin monkey.
Singled out container.
We've got 50 single men.
49 50. Infected, one not. Oh, will she find the one infected bachelor so they can have?
That's way more interesting. Way more interesting than this sounds. Yeah, I'm not into this at all.
Yeah, it's not really consistent with the channel it's on. It's also just like a tired sort of...
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing about viruses and like people get like, it's just, it's been done so many times mm-hmm. on TV shows that are infinitely more successful.
Agreed.
Unless you have something that really draws you other than like some sort of weird teenage sex appeal. Like it's, there's not much that people are going to be going to this show for that they don't already get from other shows.
The BBC did a great one a couple years ago called Survivors that was like one season long that was after that it hit, and it was not Walking Dead as far as it, like when you got the virus, you died.
Mm.
But it was like, this virus kills almost everybody. That was way more interesting than this sounds.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a show on TNT right now that's basically Containment.
Yeah.
The Last Ship.
Oh, yeah.
And like, it's in its second season and I'm watching. It's pretty good. But like, there's only so long, like so many shows that you can take until you're literally getting sick of shows where people get sick.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You know, like at what
Containment point, needs to be contained.
Especially with all the anti-vaxxers you're hearing about now. It's
right,
like
right.
You're hearing like people dying of measles. Do you need to see it on TV in fiction?
No.
When you're seeing it on CNBC or whatever.
Like the draw of movies like Outbreak, you know, like the original Outbreak mm-hmm. was that it made you feel like everything is going to make you sick.
Yeah.
Like you did not want to leave the house for at least 24 hours after seeing that movie because you were literally afraid that somebody out there had Ebola.
So this is a ploy to get people to stay home and watch more CW.
It must be. And it's not going to work because I'm out.
All right. Let's start wrapping this thing up. Final thoughts or something you would like to plug, Matt West?
Support your local comic shops, not the big ones. Go to the little home run ones. I personally go to the Time Capsule in Cranston, but try to find those ones that are individually run by not by a big chain because they need your support and keep comic books alive.
Sure do. Paulo.
Continue to support the Geek Generation. Just go to the website and follow the support link, I think it is.
You can click the Patreon button on there, or you can go right to thegeekgeneration.com/support.
Do all that stuff and keep this going so that we can make more content for
you. Yeah. Head on over to thegeekgeneration.com to see everything else that we do. If you use iTunes, please rate the show and write a review. We always appreciate those. You can like us at facebook.com/thegeekgeneration and follow at Geek Generation on Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at The Night Angel. You can support the show by going to thegeekgeneration.com/support. Send emails to podcast@thegeekgeneration.com. And as always, the show theme is provided by Machine Supremacy. A link to their site can also be found on our site. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with more stuff for you. And we will see you then. Later.
Bye.
Make it so.